Dr. McNaughton, you've just been appointed the first recipient of the Polaris Award that the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research has established. What does this award mean to you?
Well, more than what it means to me, what it means to the advancement of science in Alberta generally is that it provides a counterpoint to the normal academic department. In a normal academic department, the mission is primarily teaching, and therefore there's a requirement for breadth, and so that all the aspects of a particular field are covered. But that doesn't provide the opportunity to focus on a particular topic and really create a group that can make significant advances through a team effort. And the Polaris Award, I think, is part of a very far-seeing policy in Alberta of putting away money for education and science. It was recently initiated to try to bring people who are senior members or, you know, advanced in a particular field of science who could bring together a team to focus on a particular topic. And that's what the award means to me then, is it gives me the opportunity to create my dream team to focus on the areas of science that I'm interested in.
Well, let's talk a bit about your area of science. What is it that you're trying to achieve with your research?
Well, my research is fundamentally about how the brain acquires information, how it represents knowledge in the activity of billions of brain cells, how it stores that information and, in some sense, reprocesses the information over time to generate knowledge. So I'm interested in how the brain takes experience, day-to-day experience, and converts it into knowledge that increases the survivability of the organism for future events.
Now, one of the other areas you're looking at is how the brain ages normally over time. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you're looking at there?
Well, I have been involved in collaborative work in brain aging for many years, and the kinds of things my colleagues and I have looked at range from basic physiological mechanisms through which brain cells alter their connectivity, which is to say, there are changes with aging in the mechanisms the brain uses to store information. But there are also changes in some of the fundamental dynamics of how the brain just operates with age. And so that's the general kind of thing we've been looking at. We have also done a little bit of applied work trying to assess various pharmacological treatments that may ameliorate some of these changes.
Well, how do you actually do your research?
We work with animals, rats, and most of our work involves surgically implanting very fine microelectrodes in the brain. For those that might be a little taken aback by that, you should understand that the brain has no pain receptors, so this is a completely painless operation. But it's something that it enables us to have a window on the signaling mechanisms in various parts of the brain that are involved in learning and memory. And by being able to read the signals, we can then have a direct method of determining whether the signals are being processed effectively.
Now, I understand that you're a pioneer in neurophysiological and gene activation techniques. What exactly is that?
Okay. Well, the name of the game in my field is to be able to read the activity of brain cells. I should begin by explaining that all of our experiences, all of our memories and our perceptions have a correlate in the activity of brain cells, the spiking or the discharge of little impulses from one brain cell to another. And over the years, neurophysiologists have developed techniques of putting micro electrodes in the brain and recording those impulses from one or two brain cells at a time. But information in the brain is coded by the collective activity of billions of cells. And it's been a technical problem historically to be able to record from enough cells simultaneously that one can actually read the message that that particular region of the brain is generating. So my technical developments over the years have been really directed towards advancing the ability to look at the collective activity of many cells at once. And so that's in the domain of what we call electrophysiology, which is basically to record the activity electrically. But more recently, it's become known that there are various genes that are switched on and off rapidly when brain cells are active. And by determining whether a particular brain cell is expressing one of these genes, one, in a sense, can look at the recent history of that cell's activity. And that just provides another window, not with perhaps the same temporal resolution, but over large areas of the brain. And it gives us a tool for determining which parts of the brain are attending to which kinds of information.
Now, is that something you would observe using, say, an MRI?
No. Well, at some level, yes. My first response is no. But with an MRI, one is not looking directly at the activity of brain cells. One is looking at blood flow, which is correlated with increased activity. But with MRI, we can only look at volumes of brain that are on the order of half a centimeter cube, maybe a little smaller. Half a centimeter cube contains billions of brain cells. And so MRI doesn't give us the opportunity to tell what the cells are actually saying. It takes a technique that allows one to look at individual cells, but large numbers of them, to do that. So my technology is really complementary to fMRI because the MRI techniques give a hint as to where interesting things might be going on in the brain, but they don't tell us what's going on.
So how do you see then at that tiny little level what is going on?
Each brain cell, when it emits a signal, creates a very weak electric field around it. And that weak electric field is like an impulse. It lasts about a thousandth of a second, a millisecond. And we can detect that impulse by putting extremely small wires in the brain, and I'm talking finer than a baby's hair, and bringing the tip of that wire near one of these cells, and then taking the signal out, amplifying it, and processing it in a computer, and looking. So if you do this with many of these wires, and there are some technical details which I won't go into here because it would probably take us too long to unpack it. But using this basic technology, we can monitor the impulse activity from one or 200 cells at once. And that's sometimes enough for us to be able to gain an insight into what the information that group of cells is trying to communicate to other regions of the brain. For example, one of the things we've been able to do is to show that in certain parts of the brain, when a experience is encoded in that part of the brain during behavior and the animal goes to sleep, that same part of the brain replays those experiences on fast forward. It plays back the data it took at about six times normal speed. That's the kind of thing we look at.
So is that the sort of thing where if the rat's asleep, or us, that you're refiling that information and sorting it out?
Exactly. We believe part of the process that's often called memory consolidation. So when information is initially registered in the brain, the pattern of connections that that bit of information will ultimately generate takes some time, and it takes what we call playback or a kind of rehearsal for those connections to be fully formed. And so what happens is that information is initially registered in a region of the brain called the hippocampus, and that region of the brain, if one were to use computer terminology, basically generates a bunch of pointers to the places in the rest of the brain where the information is really stored. So it's like it creates a barcode for a particular experience. And then when we sleep, it recreates that barcode, which causes the rest of the brain to recreate the actual information. And then slowly over time, the various regions that are really holding the information become interconnected in such a way that they can communicate that to each other more effectively without having to go through a sort of a secondary process. And that's how we think long-term memory is ultimately formed.
Along with the Polaris Award from the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, you're also receiving support as part of it from ICOR. What role does ICOR play in your area of neuroscience? Because they're involved with information technology and computation.
Right. Exactly. Well, computation actually is key to developing a theoretical perspective by which we can understand how the brain works. And that actually occurs at two levels, both of which ICOR is interested in. At one level, we have people with mathematical and physics training that are developing algorithmic approaches to understanding the process of information communication in the brain, and also approaches to the analysis of the huge amounts of data that we acquire in a given experiment. So the kind of experiment we run, we may easily collect half a terabyte of physiological data that needs to be reduced and made sense of. And so the people with information technology training help or contribute to this field by developing sort of mathematical and algorithmic approaches. In addition, there are people in ICOR already and people that we'll be bringing in under the Polaris ICOR collaboration that think about the brain as an information processing device. It used to be thought that the brain was like a digital computer, and of course now we know that it's far from being like a digital computer. Its method of computation is radically different from how computers compute. But that provides insight into, you know, how we can indeed improve computation. And in fact, many advanced computer architectures are actually taking a look at the brain and how the brain does its job to think about better ways of processing data in computer science.
You're coming to Lethbridge from the University at Arizona. And really, you could have gone anywhere in the world. What is it that you're going to be able to achieve at Lethbridge that perhaps you couldn't have elsewhere?
Well, first of all, it's not true that anywhere in the world would have provided the kind of opportunity that the Polaris Award is providing. So that makes Alberta unique in the sense that I don't think that such a funding opportunity and the opportunity to create a team focused on my area of interest would have been so easy to find. And in particular, coming to Lethbridge has advantages for me because we have a group here that has already established itself in the field that is known as behavioral neuroscience. They have a great deal of expertise in studying animal behavior, in quantifying animal behavior, in thinking about the mechanisms of animal behavior, and doing complementary kinds of neuroscience experimental work, trying to understand how the brain computes. So I'm bringing a couple of advanced technologies into a group that I think is ripe for receiving them, and together we hope to apply these technologies and collaborate to bring the field one big step further.
Dr. McNaughton, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and congratulations on receiving the Polaris Award. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.